So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha, text number 35. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Asti Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O Lord, Your form is worshipable by performances of sacrifice, but souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri and others, are in the touch of Your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kusha grass, in your eyes is the clarified butter, and in your four legs are the four kinds of fruitive activities. Translation responsively. O Lord.
O Lord.
Your form is worshipable.
Your form is worshipable.
By performances of sacrifice.
By performances of sacrifice.
But souls who are simply miscreants.
But souls who are simply miscreants.
Are unable to see it.
Are unable to see it.
All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri and others, are in the touch of your skin.
In your bodily hairs
is the kusha grass.
In your eyes is the clarified butter.
And in your four legs
are the four kinds of fruitive activities.
Purport. There is a class of miscreants who are known in the words of Bhagavad Gita as Vedavadi, or so-called strict followers of the Vedas. They do not believe in the incarnation of the Lord, what to speak of the Lord's incarnation as the worshipable hog. They describe worship of the different forms or incarnations of the Lord as anthropomorphism. In the estimation of Srimad Bhagavatam, these men are miscreants, and in Bhagavad Gita 7.15, they are called not only miscreants, but also fools and the lowest of mankind. And it is said that their knowledge has been plundered by illusion due to their atheistic temperament. For such condemned persons, the Lord's incarnation as a gigantic hog is invisible. These strict followers of the Vedas who despise the eternal forms of the Lord may know from Srimad Bhagavatam that such incarnations are personified forms of the Vedas. Lord Bohr's skin, his eyes, and his bodily hair holes are all described here as different parts of the Vedas. He is therefore the personified form of the Vedic hymns, and specifically the Gayatri Mantra. Om Gyanatmi Randasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manohishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sta Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragnatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Sta Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namosute, Tapta, Kanchana, Goranki, Radhe, Vrindavaneshri, Rishavanu, Sute, Devi, Pananami, Hari, Priye, Panchakalpa, Dhruvyascha, Kripa, Sindhu, Pye, Vacha, Patitanam, Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo, Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
And the verse again. Rupam Tvaitan Nanujishkutatmanam Tudashinam Devayad Advaratmakam Tandam Siyasya Tachibahiromasu Ajyam Drishi Tvangrishu Chatuhokram. O Lord, Your form is worshipable by performances of sacrifice, but souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri and others, are in the touch of Your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kusha grass, in your eyes is the clarified butter, and in your four legs are the four kinds of fruitive activities. Hare Krishna. So, text 35, where we're hearing some prayers from the rishis in the high planets, which will take us most of... still got some long past, one long chapter, that's good. So, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, first word in the Sanskrit is rupam, form. Rupam tavaitan, this form of yours. We've been talking a bit previously about impersonalism, that the materialistic concept, we see that form is perishable, whether it be organic matter or inorganic matter, it inevitably perishes and degrades, at least degrades, if not perishes. And so people who inquire into spiritual life sometimes apply that logic to spiritual life, that there can't be any such thing as form in a spiritual spiritual realm, because we see here that form is temporary. So that's, you know, in our limited experience. So we have to be prepared to open our, you know, minds to something that's beyond our experience. And this is humility, to not think that we know everything, that, you know, it couldn't possibly be that God has a form. So to be humble and open-minded is to, then we can accept this knowledge. As it said in Gita, that the first item of knowledge is actually humility. Without humility, then the knowledge that one receives, academic knowledge and so on, is it's not real knowledge. Like, it's, yeah, that's first thing, that's not actually knowledge, that's just bodily information, and has no eternal benefit, no lasting benefit for the jiva. So real knowledge is spiritual knowledge, and to acquire that we require humility. So Prabhupada in this purport is pointing out that there's this class of people known as the Vedavadis. Vadi meaning advocates. We hear of Brahmavadis, Mayavadis. So Vadi meaning advocate. Like they propound this certain whatever philosophy it is. So Vedavadis who proclaim that, they are very strict followers of the Vedas. So this is talked about in Bhagavad Gita. As we know that the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all of the Vedas, Gita Upanishad, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra being the conclusion of the Vedas. And then beyond that, we are also fortunate enough to study the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is, an exposition of that, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is describing pure bhakti, and we're able to see that manifesting and practical application through the teachings and example of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Krishna himself and appearing as his own devotee to teach us pure devotional service. So in Bhagavad Gita, the essence of the Vedas is that we find in chapter 2 the Vedavadis are also mentioned. Krishna describes Yam imam pushpitam vacham pavadan chavi pashtita vedavadarita pata nanyad astiti vadina kamatmana svaga para janmakama phalapradam kriyavishesha bahulam bhogashvarya kitimpriti. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So here you find, the so-called strict followers of the Vedas. You find what is their actual motivation. They're not coming to the conclusion of the Vedas, and they're not being strict about following all the Vedic rules and regulations, out of any spiritual sentiment. It's actually, they want sense gratification, because the Vedic literature, in the Hare Krishna movement, we're just dealing with the essence of the Vedas and all the transcendental knowledge of the Vedas. But a lot of the Vedic literature, although it's directing people toward a transcendental goal, a lot of it is not transcendental. As Krishna says a bit further down, that the Vedas deal mostly with the three modes of material nature. So that's obviously not transcendental. So there's many, many fruitive activities, doing various kinds of yajna. What's that one? Narayan. Surya Narayan yajna. It's a popular one that people ask for, as Kangesha Prabhu explains when he's doing yajnas at people's houses. People ask, can you do Surya Narayan yajna? And in general, these yajnas, their goal is that they promise some fruitive benefit at the end of by performing that yajna. So, as Krishna says, elevation to heavenly planets, good birth, power, and so forth. So, I'll read the purport to that verse. So, Prabhupada writes that people in general are not very intelligent, and due to their ignorance, they are most attached to the fruitive activities recommended in the Karmakanda portions of the Vedas. They do not want anything more than sense gratificatory proposals for enjoying life in heaven, where wine and women are available and material opulence is very common. In the Vedas, many sacrifices are recommended for elevation to the heavenly planets, especially the Jyotishtoma sacrifices. In fact, it is stated that anyone desiring elevation to heavenly planets must perform these sacrifices, and men with a poor fund of knowledge think that this is the whole purpose of Vedic wisdom. It is very difficult for such inexperienced persons to be situated in the determined action of Krishna consciousness. As fools are attached to the flowers of poisonous trees without knowing the results of such attractions, unenlightened men are similarly attracted by such heavenly opulence and the sense enjoyment thereof. Those who perform the 4 month penances of Chaturmasya become eligible to drink the Somaras beverages to become immortal and happy forever. Even on this earth, some are very eager to have Somaras to become strong and fit to enjoy sense gratifications. Such persons have no faith in liberation from material bondage, and they are very much attached to the pompous ceremonies of Vedic sacrifices. They are generally sensual and do not want anything other than the heavenly pleasures of life. It is understood that there are gardens called Nandana Kanana, in which there is good opportunity for association with angelic beautiful women and having a profuse supply of Somaras wine. Such bodily happiness is certainly sensual. Therefore, there are those who are purely attached to such material temporary happiness as lords of the material world. So, by their following the Vedic rituals, they are not dealing with this brute problem that the jiva has in the material world of trying to become the lord of the material world. They're actually increasing their attachment, although this process of Vedic yag is a gradual process that does purify people's hearts and consciousness. So it's interesting. In other cultures and traditions and so on, we find some allusions to this kind of Vedic yagyas and enjoying heavenly pleasure, as it says that the garden's called Nandanakanna, in which there is good opportunity for association with angelic, beautiful women and somaras wine. So someone was telling me how in some countries in Southeast Asia, there's traditional, in their cultural, there's traditional dancers who are just, young ladies, very fancily dressed. And so they were telling me that, they're actually called apsaras in their culture. And so I was like, oh yeah, really, that's apsaras. They're described in the Vedic literature also, that the in the heavenly planets, these young apsaras or heavenly dancers and musicians. And even in the Mahabharata we find many such descriptions of kings and so on going to the heavenly planets to enjoy there. Even Arjuna went there, I think. And Arjuna also went to the heavenly planets and saw some apsaras there. And in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the story of King Puruvara and Urvashi. I remember several years ago, Bhakti Sahasrabhu told me that past time. I was like, it's quite funny. When King Puruvara, Urvashi in the heavenly planets, in King Indra's court, Urvashi heard about the glories of King Puruvara, the earthly king, his great prowess and so on. So she became attracted just by hearing about that. And so she wanted to enjoy with him. So she, I think, did she come to Earth? Anyway, they got together and spent a lot of time together enjoying. But then King Indra was wondering, where's Urvashi? She's the best dancer. She's the best in the amongst the apsaras. So then he told the Gandharvas to go down to the earthly kingdom, to King Puruvara's kingdom, and get Urvashi back. And Urvashi had told the king that she had two pet lambs who she was very attached to as her own sons, and then she would never see him naked, only in the dark, and she would only accept food cooked in ghee, I think. So then the Gandharvas played a trick and stole the pet sheep in the night, and the sheep were crying out for Urvashi. So then the king, knowing that he had to protect the sheep if he wanted to enjoy with Urvashi, he ran out into the night, but he was naked. And then the Gandharvas were very effulgent and glowing, and so they illuminated the king when he was naked. And so then Urvashi left him because he broke the condition. So this is the kind of pastimes that go on in the, in the heavenly planets and so on. But it's all under the same illusion of being the lord of the material world. And the significant thing in this purport, as Prabhupada mentions, for these followers of the Vedas, it is very difficult for such inexperienced persons to be situated in the determined action of Krishna consciousness. So, if someone becomes too much attracted to these Vedic rituals, then, as Prabhupada describes, that determination is killed by too much sex life. So, if they get attracted just by wanting to enjoy in heaven, then they won't have any impetus for spiritual life. So this is a significant lesson for devotees also, that too much attraction for material sense enjoyment just, you know, puts water on your determination for acting in Krishna consciousness. As Krishna describes in the next verse, that those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, or in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So this so such followers of the Vedas, Prabhupada describes that they describe worship of the different forms or incarnations of the Lord as anthropomorphism. So I wasn't exactly clear on that meaning, so I just was only asked to give class earlier this morning, so I just looked up that word. Anthropomorphism. So anthro generally referring to humans, and morphism is like morphing, changing. So anthropomorphism. Few attribution of human motivation, characteristics or behavior to inanimate objects, animals or natural phenomena. There's a few definitions, just so we can get the idea. The attribution of human form or behavior to a deity, animal, etc. Description of a human attribute or personality to anything impersonal or irrational. The assignment of human shape and attributes to gods, animals, etc. So, in relation, in the context of this pastime with Lord Varaha, the idea of these followers of the Vedas that saying that worshipping the Lord in his different incarnations, they say it is anthropomorphism. In other words, that God is not really, you know, God basically has no form, but you're just saying God has this form as a pig. You know, it's actually just a pig, but you're calling it God. You're giving it God-like qualities and human-like characteristics and so on, and but actually it's just a pig or it's just a fish. And so their idea of God is, or maybe more impersonal, so they don't believe in a personal conception of the Lord. So Prabhupada says they despise the eternal forms of the Lord. But actually Prabhupada very nicely turns it around on these so-called strict followers of the Vedas. He says, these strict followers of the Vedas who despise the eternal forms of the Lord may know from Srimad Bhagavatam that such incarnations are personified forms of the Vedas. So instead of being... actually, these incarnations, they're personified forms of the Vedas, so all the Vedic hymns and so on are actually personified in these incarnations. Krishna describes in chapter 9 that aham kratu aham yagna sadhaham aham oshidam mantroham aham eva jam aham agni aham hutam. He says, but it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. So all these Vedic sacrifices, they are Krishna. And a similar verse as in chapter 2 that Krishna says, Trivijamam, Trivijamam Somapa Puta Papa Yagna Ishtra Svagatim Pratayante Te Punyamasa Jasurendra Lokam Ashnanti Divyan Dividev Hogan. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. In the purport, the word Trivijja refers to the three Vedas, Sama, Yajur, and Rig. A Brahmana who has studied these three Vedas is called a Trivedi. Anyone who is very much attached to knowledge derived from these three Vedas is respected in society. Unfortunately, there are many great scholars of the Vedas who do not know the ultimate purport of studying them. Therefore, Krishna herein declares himself to be the ultimate goal for the Trivedis. Actual Trivedis take shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and engage in pure devotional service to satisfy the Lord. Devotional service begins with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and side by side trying to understand Krishna in truth. Unfortunately, those who are simply official students of the Vedas become more interested in offering sacrifices to the different demigods like Indra and Chandra. By such endeavour, the worshippers of different demigods are certainly purified of the contamination of the lower qualities of nature and are thereby elevated to the higher planetary systems or heavenly planets known as Mahalok, Janalok, Tapalok, etc. Once situated on those high planetary systems, one can satisfy his senses hundreds of thousands of times better than on this planet. So the actual purpose of the Vedas is to get liberated from the material world, not to, as it says there, to enjoy our senses hundreds of thousands better than here. That's only increasing our bondage to the material world. So by studying the Vedas, one should understand our spiritual position. Not just focus on the material benefits that can come from performing sacrifices, but understand our spiritual position, what will actually make us happy. It's because the same, you know, Anandamaya Vyasa, that everyone is seeking happiness and bliss, but we just have to know where to find real happiness that will satisfy the spirit soul. All these sacrifices in the Vedas, they're just like allurements, as that previous verse said, that the flowery words of the Vedas, they're very attractive looking descriptions of the heavenly planets and so on, Somaras. And so our senses get allured by such descriptions. But actually we need to study the Vedas and become attracted to the descriptions of Krishna's form and Krishna's pastimes, and then we'll be able to experience real pleasure in such devotional service. Um, as Krishna mentions in the 15th chapter, that he is the actual goal of the Vedas. Vedaish cha sare aham eva vejo, and the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra as well. So in our devotional service, we are also performing sacrifice. Sacrifice everyone has to do, otherwise our work causes bondage in this world. That if the work is not offered as a sacrifice, then there must be a karmic reaction. But if work is offered as a sacrifice, either in karma yoga or devotional service, then that material reaction is nullified. So we're trying to engage in the Sankirtan Yajna. And as it said, there are six characteristics of devotional service, pure devotional service. The first two being Kleshagni and Shubhada. So removal of all distresses and the appearance of auspiciousness. So these are just in the stage of devotional service, sadhana bhakti. And is that right? Bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. So, but we shouldn't be caught up on these two things, that we're just, because a tendency can be there that we're suffering so much in the material world that when there's kleshagni, removal of distresses, then we're so thankful to Krishna and we're just happy, content to chant every drowns and not really endeavour in our devotional service and find out that there's more. Like someone was saying to me yesterday that, you can expand your consciousness and mind so much and heart, but actually devotional service is an ocean, and or if you see the horizon somewhere and then you keep walking towards it, and it just keeps unfolding. So in the same way in our devotional service, if we keep practicing with humility and allow Krishna's reciprocation to come upon us, then we find that there's newer and newer experiences and realizations in devotional service. We just need to practice very patiently, and if Krishna wants to, give some blessings, then that's his prerogative. And if he, but our duty is just to faithfully execute the process of devotional service with full enthusiasm, and not get sidetracked or diverted by different, opulences that may or may not come, or people offering us respect. But understand that we're just a servant of the servant. I was reading that interview with George Harrison recently. I just hadn't really read it all. So George Harrison said that was the most significant thing that he found about Prabhupada, was his humility, and that he said, he never said, I am God. He always just said, I am the servant of the servant of the servant. So that was Prabhupada's mood, and we should also develop that mood and imbibe it in our devotional service, that we're just here to serve the devotees. And like I also recently heard someone saying how, if you're serving prasadam, I think it's Naveen and Radha, that's right. If you're serving prasadam, you can actually enjoy so much more than if you have a huge plate of, because you get full and you're just like, oh, it gets a bit mixed. That enjoyment changes into a bit regret that you ate too much. And but if, like, Bhaktisattva was fortunate enough to be serving out yesterday. So you can serve hundreds of people and see them all happy to be receiving such prasadam. And you receive some of their happiness. And unlimited kind of way. So serving people is actually more enjoyable than taking for ourselves. Earlier this month, middle of the month, when I went to the Sunday feast at Hare Krishna Valley, so I took some people with me, and I was really just wanted to allow them, hope that they can have a nice time, enjoyable experience at the farm, get away from the hectic pace of the city, and just enjoy the rural atmosphere. And so I made them some breakfast, and then we left, and it was so nice just to serve people rather than thinking about am I going to have a good day today? Am I going to enjoy my service or get some happiness? But if we try to give happiness to others, then we will experience the highest happiness. And that giving happiness to people is actually giving them devotional service, somehow giving them Krishna. So not that we give them happiness by giving money to poor people or different things like that for their sense gratification, because that will give them suffering. So understand what is the highest happiness and try to give that to people. And firstly, experience it ourselves. Have some experience that, yes, this devotional service is the highest happiness, just like we had kirtan for more than an hour yesterday morning with Prabhu Das. And it's just so pleasurable, so satisfying. So you have to have these experiences, and then by understanding that, yes, this is the highest pleasure, then be confident to give that to others. And it's interesting, that kind of, this happiness that we get from devotional service, it's, if you think of material happiness, maybe you think of someone screaming in joy or something. But devotional service is, because it's in the soul, so it's more internal. So, you see someone like Prabhu Das, he's very, measured and regular in his service, and not too, extroverted or anything like that. But then when he leads kirtan, it's obvious that he's very satisfied and happy with his service and the process of devotional service. Because otherwise, how could he lead such nice kirtan? So, this sankirtan yoga that we're trying to execute for the pleasure of Prabhupada. And so we need to remain focused and not be tempted by various material, fruitive benefits that may come to us. As it said that the devotee, liberation is standing at the doorstep of the devotee with folded hands saying, "How can I serve you?" So devotees, we shouldn't be attracted to anything material other than Krishna's pleasure. So I'll leave it there and see if there's any comments or questions on today's verse. Yes?
No, it's written, in your eyes is the clarified butter, and in your four legs are the four kinds of fruity activities.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit more detail?
Huh.
Clarified butter in the eye.
Ghee. So these are all the kusha grass, clarified butter, Chatu, Hokchung, four kinds of fruitive activities are different ingredients in Vedic sacrifices. The kusha grass is... I've never seen kusha grass. Anyone seen kusha grass? Oh, the mat. Oh, these mats? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's somehow recommended for Vedic sacrifices. And ghee. There's one purport in there. Prabhupada saying it's very hard to do all these Vedic sacrifices nowadays, actually. You need a lot of, you know, energy and time and resources, and it's just not possible in today's time, so therefore we do Sankirtan Yaga, just like it was one pastime, and Prabhupada wanted to do a yagya, and there was no ghee, there was only, you know, butter or something. So even in India it's very hard to get ghee, I've heard. It's only from buffaloes or something. It's not actual cow's ghee. So these are all different ingredients in Vedic sacrifices. And the forms of Krishna are the personification of the Vedic sacrifices. So, you know, the different parts of Krishna's body are the different parts of the Vedic sacrifice. That will be further described in tomorrow's verse. Is that okay? Yeah. Anything else? Yes,
you said that when Prabhupada does the sacrifices here, that there is one more popular that people ask him to do.
Oh, yeah. What was it? Surya Narayan.
What is it?
When Gangesha Prabhu is doing yagyas at people's homes or like that, then many times they will ask him about the Surya Narayan yagya, and from what I remember he was describing, just that's somewhere, you know, it's describing to worship the sun god, but it comes from, you know, one of the Vedas. And actually, Prabhu was describing that particular Veda or Vedic literature that it comes from was written by Suta Goswami. And Suta Goswami himself is recommending that we study Srimad Bhagavatam and perform Sankirtan Yagya and worship. Suta Goswami is saying to worship Krishna. So even though he wrote that other Veda literature describing the Surya Narayan Yagya, actually he wants people to worship Krishna, not the sun god. Anything else? Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Nitya Gaura Premanandi.